A crime so brutal that became infamous, the murder of a mother and her two kids after a 2007 home invasion by two parolees in Cheshire, Connecticut. Jurors unanimously voted to send Stephen Hayes to death after deliberating on it for 4 days. The details of the story are grim at best. Well, Dr. William Pettit, his wife Jennifer, and their two daughters were tied up in their house in 2007 after two parolees broke in, ostensibly to burgle the home. Two of the females were sexually assaulted, all three killed. The house was then set on fire. William Pettit was the only survivor. And the ruling was met with a mix of emotions for the small town in Connecticut. Many members of the community are strong opponents of the death penalty. And the past three pastors of the church where the Pettit family worshipped was also anti-death penalty. Here's a husband and father, Dr. William Pettit, again, the only surviving member of their family, explaining how he came to agree with the prosecutor's decision to seek the death penalty.
He came to my house in 2007 and said, if there's any case that deserves the death penalty, it is this. And it's my fiduciary responsibility to apply the laws of the state that the legislature have written. And if I don't go for the death penalty in this case, there's no reason to ever have it on the books. I'll listen to whatever you have to say, Bill. I'll listen to you argue with me for hours, but this is what I think we should do. And I agreed with it.
Joining us now is Elizabeth Esty. She's a resident of Cheshire, Connecticut, and a state legislator. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Celeste.
Well, you can hear Dr. William Pettit there explaining how the prosecutor said this is the law of our state, and whatever your position on the death penalty, we should prosecute to the full extent of the law. Is that kind of the same argument that's being given over dinner tables in Cheshire?
There are a lot of different arguments. I was serving on the town council when the murders happened, a mile from my home 3.5 years ago, and it has been an incredibly emotional and divisive issue in this pretty small town. You know, it's a suburban town of under 30,000 people, classic church on the green, and it has provoked a great deal of intense feelings and shock and horror, as you can imagine.
Well, what it sounds like has happened is that in Cheshire, Connecticut, there were a number of people who took a stance either pro or anti-death penalty. And then when it became a practical reality, when it was something that was happening in their own town, their opinions changed. Is that accurate?
I think that is true. I think this is so shocking and horrific. It really is our centuries in cold blood, and how one feels about something in the abstract, like the death penalty, and how one feels when it's your neighbor, your friend, your coworker, is really quite different. And I think that's what we're seeing played out here.
And some of it is religious views versus the views on what can only be described as a particularly heinous crime.
Mm-hmm.
You've described even Quakers who support the death penalty in this case.
I think that's right. I mean, friends have said, you know, Quakers are going to be lining up to pull the switch here, and I think that's right. I think if there is a discussion of what these people deserve, then there's no doubt that they do. They don't deserve to live. But I think those of us who oppose the death penalty don't view it as what the defendants deserve, but rather about the community values and what statements we make as a society about the value of life.
Well, of course, the jury is all about community values. The whole jury system is about assessing community values. And I'm wondering if a changing of a view is inappropriate in a case like this. I mean, you aren't born with a sense of the death penalty one way or another. It comes as a result of the way you deal with the issues of crime and punishment or being wronged and how you find recompense for a wrong. I mean, in this particular case, you would think that it would change people forever. It certainly changed that family forever.
Oh, certainly. And I think it will have, I think you're right, John, it will change this community. I mean,
what?
My children will always be known as being from Cheshire, Connecticut, where these horrible murders happened.
So what is the virtue of holding to a belief in the death penalty, even given the gruesome, horrific details of this crime? I mean, these girls were doused in gasoline, tied to a bed, and this house was set on fire.
Well, if you're speaking personally, I would say it's still about principles about whether the state should take away a life. And I still look at it as that killing done in my name and my children's name. And I think that there's a saying in law school that, you know, hard cases make bad law. And this is such an extreme and extraordinary case that one can say, certainly, you know, if any case deserves it, this does. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But there are also, in the neighboring community of Wallingford, Connecticut, a man was released from 22 years of prison last year for rape and murder he did not commit. And the same set of rules that apply to him are the same set of rules that have to apply to a case like this where you catch them in the act. And that's the dilemma, in part, for a legal system. We don't get a different set of rules. We don't get a different set of procedures in a case like this where we absolutely know there is no doubt about depravity. There's no doubt about evil.
So
the question is, what system do you put in place, and what do you drag the community through? The fact is, it's now 3.5 years. We have a verdict in one of the two cases.
Yeah, you still have.
We start all over again with the second one in January. The cops and the firefighters who are on the scenes have daily nightmares, and they will go back through this again. And that's part of, I think, some of us feel concern about the ongoing damage to the community that happens by the inevitable delay and the trials and the preparation. We, in the neighborhood, people refer to it as the Pettit stalkers and gawkers, people who cruise up and down that neighborhood taking pictures, stopping children, asking, do you feel safe here?
How does the death penalty make that worse?
I think it makes it worse by delay, in part. If there were life without parole, if that were the ultimate sanction, they would have pled guilty immediately. We would not be going through this in this community, and we wouldn't be facing 10 years of appeals for that family and for this community.
Elizabeth Esty, a resident of Cheshire, Connecticut. She's also a state representative in Connecticut, in the district that includes Cheshire. She's responding to the unanimous vote from jurors who voted to send Stephen Hayes to death after a 4-day deliberation in the brutal murder of a mother and her two kids from a 2007 home invasion. Again, if you have a comment on this, if you have an idea about how a particular cases affect your view of the death penalty, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.